Welcome to this week's episode of the Agribiz Show on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 KFGO. I'm Rusty Halverson. Senator John Hoeven on Tuesday met with members of the Fargo-Moorhead-West Fargo Chamber of Commerce's Agribusiness Committee to talk about North Dakota's priorities for the next farm bill. The 2018 farm bill expires at the close of September this year, and Hoeven said, if we don't get a farm bill, we'll extend it for a year. He said that's not unusual. He said Congress probably does that as often as they don't. But they have to do their best to get it right. When giving odds of passage this fall, the senator said maybe 50-50 this year. The Midwest Agriculture Summit will feature a panel discussion about navigating the farm bill on June 6th in the Butler Machinery Building at the Red River Valley Fairgrounds. Former Representative Colin Peterson and Dr. Scott Brown of the University of Missouri-Columbia will discuss issues relating to the new farm bill. Dr. Greg Lardy, Vice President of Agricultural Affairs at North Dakota State University, will moderate the discussion. I was sitting next to Dr. Lardy at the chamber event this past week, and after the roundtable had ended, I asked him if he was taking any notes for the panel discussion he's going to moderate next month, and whether he'd be able to keep it within the allotted time frame with so many different issues to talk about when it comes to the farm bill.
Well, let me answer the first question first, or the second question first, Rusty. Yeah, my job is to actually keep it to 40 minutes, so I think we got a hard cutoff at the end of that, so we'll keep the program moving. But, you know, yes, I did have a chance to, you know, listen carefully to what people were saying and the topics that were coming up relative to the Farm Bill. Certainly in terms of the importance of that to this region, you know, we got several key features there, obviously crop insurance and disaster protection and some of the coverages and so on that are important to our region's ag economy. But also, I think one of the takeaways is really the importance of working across the aisle and across rural versus urban and making sure that we've got, you know, those programs that affect SNAP and the other benefits there, that coalition is really strong. And I think Colin and Scott in that panel will definitely bring that forth as well.
Okay, we'll see you there.
Great.
Now, the 2023 Farm Bill is expected to be the first in history to cost over $1 trillion. John Newton is the chief economist for the Senate Agriculture Committee. During a recent AgriPulse webinar on the state of the Farm Bill, he said a lot of the cost increase comes from more money for SNAP.
The farm bill's increased in size by over 70%. SNAP is a big reason why the farm bill has grown so much in size. The Thrifty Food Plan update that was conducted in August of 2021 increased SNAP spending by $300 billion. And to put that into perspective, that's more than we spend on every other title in the farm bill. So SNAP is certainly eating into the farm bill. It's eating into our capacity to do other things we'd like to do in the farm bill, including in the nutrition space. You think about adding additional fruits and vegetables and their availability.
Newton says the Congressional Budget Office made two big changes to their SNAP cost projections between February and May.
First, in fiscal year 2023, they increased SNAP participation by approximately 1 million people, increased SNAP outlays by $18 billion in a single year. So SNAP went from $127 billion in February, and then their May estimate, they raised it to $145 billion. And then over the next 10-year period, they increased SNAP again by $18 billion. Combined from February to May, the Congressional Budget Office updated their forecast for SNAP spending by $36 billion, which again, and just demonstrates the magnitude of the SNAP program and its relationship to the Farm Bill. Again, over 80%.
When it comes to conservation outlays in the Farm Bill, Newton says the CBO did make a few modifications.
If we add the IRA resources that are conservation related, we're looking at conservation spending and IRA spending combined at close to $75 billion, which would make that the second largest title in the Farm Bill for farm related provisions behind crop insurance.
The possibility of lower commodity prices in the future could also mean increased costs for risk management programs.
Lower commodity prices, again, in the out years of the Farm Bill are expected to result in higher ARC and PLC payments from 2027 through 2033. We did also see in the baseline additional outlays for the dairy margin coverage program. CBO lowered milk prices. They lowered feed costs, but they also lowered the income over feed cost margin by a substantial amount and increased DMC outlays by approximately $1 billion or so over 10 years. And then they also essentially doubled outlays in the livestock disaster space.
Again, that is John Newton, chief economist for the Senate Agriculture Committee. The U.S. Supreme Court this week ruling against the Environmental Protection Agency in Sackett versus EPA, issuing a unanimous decision that the agency overstepped its authority to regulate waters of the U.S., or WOTUS, under the Clean Water Act. National Cattlemen's Beef Association Chief Counsel Mary Thomas Hart calls it a big win for landowners, farmers, and ranchers.
The Supreme Court found in favor of the Sackett family and killed the significant nexus test, which has kind of been, I think we can all call it, the burr under our saddle, right? It's caused a lot of problems for landowners across the country, and we are happy to see that test go away.
The WOTUS rule has been under a preliminary injunction for more than half of the states in the nation, including in North Dakota, following an order from U.S. District Judge Daniel Hovland last month. There's been a lot of confusion regarding what constitutes a water of the U.S.
I think the goal of eliminating the significant nexus test is to provide more regulatory certainty. So NCBA wrote an amicus brief to the Supreme Court highlighting a lot of issues with the significant nexus test. One of those issues is the criminal liability attached to the Clean Water Act and attached to violations of the Clean Water Act. NCBA argued to the court that there's no way we can constitutionally hold someone liable for a violation of the Clean Water Act if they're not even aware that they're violating the Clean Water Act, right? And the significant nexus test was so broad and so vague that someone could violate the Clean Water Act without even realizing it.
We'll have more on this week's episode of the Agribiz Show coming up in just a moment on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 KFGO. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Agribiz Show on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 KFGO. I'm Rusty Halverson. USDA and the Department of Homeland Security, Science, and Technology celebrating the dedication and ribbon cutting of the National Bio and Agro Defense Facility. The facility, which offers the highest level of biocontainment laboratories and safety protocols, is the first of its kind in the U.S. and will allow scientists to study and diagnose critical animal diseases. Julie Brewer, DHS Executive Director of Innovation and Collaboration, explained her agency's role in that facility.
A lot of people ask, you know, why is DHS involved in an agricultural research lab? It would be catastrophic if it came into the United States, any foreign animal disease. And it's critical. The food supply is critical. The zoonotic diseases and protecting human health. And DHS needs and wants to be a partner with USDA in this space. So we will continue to be strong strategic partners. We will continue to understand the threats that face this nation and work with our USDA partners to prioritize that research. So we're doing the most important research to advance vaccines, diagnostics, biotherapeutics, to protect our animals and protect our food supply.
The facility in Kansas will replace the DHS Plum Island Animal Disease Center, which is a biosafety level 3 facility in New York that is more than 68 years old. Both departments have collaborated on the requirements for this next generation facility since 2006, and Manhattan, Kansas was selected as the site in 2009. The Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis shared the results of its agricultural credit conditions survey for the first quarter of 2023. The 9th Fed Reserve District includes the states of Minnesota, Montana, North and South Dakota, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and northwestern Wisconsin. Joe Mahone is the Regional Outreach Director for the Minneapolis Fed. Agricultural lenders say farmers in the 9th District are in overall solid condition.
And this has been true really since the waning period of the pandemic. We've seen strong commodity prices, and that's benefited farm households quite a bit. So we've seen continued strong income. The incomes that we saw in the first quarter of 2023 compared to a year earlier, increase on balance. We also saw increases in household spending. However, capital spending by farms, purchases of equipment and buildings, was relatively flat overall.
That lack of increase in capital spending comes from two factors.
Folks largely attributed that to supply chain issues, availability of equipment, as well as to higher interest rates that it's going to take to finance those purchases. We did see continued increase in interest rates, not surprising given the economic environment right now. Higher rate of loan repayment, kind of consistent with a relatively good cash position of farmers, and also consistent with that decrease in loan demand, farmers demanding less credit because they have more cash on hand. We saw continued increase in land values and rents from a year ago, and that's all good news.
Agricultural lenders are somewhat less optimistic for the second quarter.
Looking forward, we also asked these lenders about their outlook for the coming quarter, and that was a little bit more uncertain. In fact, the income picture takes a negative turn, at least in the outlook. A lot of comments on what was going on behind that. A lot of folks pointed to an expectation for downward movement in agricultural commodity prices and for persistently high input costs, kind of compressing those profit margins for farm operations.
That's Joe Mahone of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis. Potato exports reached a record $2.1 billion in sales in 2022. Compared to the prior year, volume sales dropped 4.2%, but were higher than in 2018 and 2020. The value of U.S. potato exports rose across all potato types, resulting in an 11% increase over the previous year. Global price hikes and inflation can be attributed to the growth. Demand for U.S. potatoes remained strong in 2022, showing that the slight drop in export volume resulted in tight supply. Over the year, the top export markets for U.S. potatoes were Mexico, Canada, Japan, South Korea, and the Philippines. The value of U.S. frozen potato exports rose almost 14%, reaching $1.34 billion. But the overall numbers could be even better if Japan played fairly. A letter from more than 30 members of Congress asking Ag Secretary Vilsack for help getting U.S. fresh table stock potatoes into Japan. National Potato Council President Cam Quarles says talks with Japan on the matter have been going nowhere.
USDA has been engaged in a negotiation with the Japanese for a number of years now. Those negotiations, USDA put them at the top of their list about 4 years ago, and really the Japanese have just stalemated any discussions since that time.
Again, that's Cam Quarles of the National Potato Council. The American Farm Bureau signing two more right to repair MOUs, or Memorandums of Understanding, this time with AGCO and Kubota. Emily Buckman, American Farm Bureau Government Affairs Director, says combined with the MOUs from John Deere and CNH Industrial, the four agreements cover about 70% of the agricultural machinery sold in the U.S.
We are extremely excited that we have now secured four memorandums of understanding since January. Right to repair has been an important issue for a number of years, and this effort has been a culmination of years of discussions with manufacturers, and we're excited to see our efforts come to fruition. And we do believe that this is something that will provide our members with the tools that they need to make necessary repairs when their equipment breaks down.
Elsewhere, the owners of new Ford vehicles will be able to tune in to their AM radios in their cars, trucks, and SUVs after all. CEO Jim Farley writing in social media postings this week, the company is reversing a decision to scrub the band after speaking with government policy leaders who are concerned about keeping emergency alerts that are often sounded on AM stations. Federal lawmakers recently introduced the Opportunities for Fairness in Farming Act, or OFF Act, aimed at reforming the federal checkoff system. National Cattlemen's Beef Association's CEO Colin Woodall responds.
The concern is that this is not about the checkoff. It's actually about animal activists attacking us as beef producers. And the reason why I say that is when you look at the provisions of the OFF Act, the bill that was put in place or introduced rather by Senator Cory Booker, who's a Democrat vegan from New Jersey, and Senator Mike Lee, who's a meat-eating Republican from Utah, you can quite clearly see that they don't understand how the checkoff works.
As one example, Woodall says the OFF Act says checkoff money should not be used for lobbying.
You can't do that today. It says that checkoff money should not be used to disparage other commodities, agricultural commodities. You can't do that with the checkoff today. It says that the financials of checkoffs should be published so producers can look at them. All you have to do is go to the Cattlemen's Beef Board website, and you can find the financials of the Cattlemen's Beef Board.
The legislation also says that the checkoff should be allowed to be investigated or audited by the Office of Inspector General.
Something else that can also happen today. So you have to step back and say, well, if all this stuff is already happening, why are they doing it? Because it's an attack on the checkoff, and the real underlying support here are animal activist groups.
That's going to do it for this week's episode of the Agribiz Show. I've been your host, Rusty Halverson, on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 KFGO.